Group meeting, Friday, 30th September, 1983. I think it will be very useful to remind ourselves, particularly in view of new friends who have come in today, of the purpose of these meetings. What is our concern here? We do not meet in order to satisfy an intellectual curiosity about matters religious or about the art of living humanly, which, as I have always said, really means to live religiously. Because the very word human, if you look into its derivation, you will discover it has a most extraordinary meaning. It means the happy, I would even go to the extent of saying the blissful creator. The man part, man, from which our word mind comes in, is derived, means, as the dictionary will tell you, to think. Now, of course, that's nonsensical. Because if we consider the matter for a moment, we will see that our thinking is nothing but inaudible talking. It is a string of words. It is a string of words which come into being through the operation of the impressions which we receive through our senses, the brain makes those impressions into a meaningful pattern. And this meaningful pattern is expressed in words as such. But what does every single word in every single language refer to? It refers to the finite, the temporal, and the mortal, to things, events, circumstances, energies, forces, and so on and so on. All these words are concerned with that which is mortal. It has nothing to do with the immortal, with transcendence, with ultimate reality, or use any phrase you like, you see. So, to say that man, the Sanskrit root man, means to think in that sense is a hopeless misconception of the reality. You'll get the clue to understanding the real meaning of this if you study the writings of Hermes Trismegistus. There, the reference is made to God as All-Father Mind. Now, All-Father Mind created man in his own likeness and fell in love with him. But this creation takes place through what is called the creative word, the word of power. Now, All-Father Mind, or God, or whatever term you like to use. Does God speak any human language? Does God deal with that which is finite, mortal, temporal, perishable, full of conflict, misery, etc.? Not at all. This word, which is the creative word, the Hebrew term is ma'amar, the creative word. In Zarathustrianism you have what is known as the ahuna vairya, the creative word. And of course in India you have the sound which is denominated by om, A-U-M, om, you see. This is the creative word. Obviously these sounds, these words, have nothing to do with any human language. And since our thinking is entirely in terms of our human languages as such, the thought in the mind of God, which is the real meaning of the word logos, the thought in the mind of God, the creative word, is a creative energy, a primordial, undifferentiated creative energy which brings the universe into being. And the old people who knew that meant precisely that when they talked of us human beings as human. And man means not to think in our sense of the word thinking, but in this divine creative sense. So the human in fulfillment actually represents God the divine creator, the blissful creator. The prefix hu, H-U, it is interchangeable, it is the Sanskrit, it is interchangeable with the Pali S-U, su, you see. The two prefixes both mean the utterly happy, the completely fulfilled, the blissful. So that is the profoundest meaning, as far as I can see, of the word human. Now, our concern with these meetings right from the beginning has been, how should we human beings live religiously in order that the purpose of our existence may be truly fulfilled? Now, mere study of religions in the comparative sense and so forth is a help up to a point. In fact, it is indispensable. But that is not our main concern. Our main concern is, how shall we live religiously? Take the word religion and derive it from its original Latin source, religare, as used by Servius, Lactantius, and St. Augustine. Religare means to bind back. To bind back to what? To the ultimate source. And it is also derived by others, particularly by Cicero, to re legere, which means to gather together. You see? Now, whichever meaning you take, you will see that religion implies that mode of life, of actual living in thought and feeling, in word and in deed, which enables you, which enables me, the ordinary human being living on this planet, to restore himself to perfect union with the source from which he came. You see? So now, since that has been our purpose, we are not concerned with sort of upholding any one particular religion as the last word and so forth. There's no such thing. And the very term comparative religion is a foolish term, I think, for this reason. Religion is concerned with transcendence. The context of transcendence is the infinite, the eternal, the immortal. How do you measure, how do you compare anything in the context of the infinite and the eternal? It is totally impossible. You see, as has happened all throughout the ages, I should say, since man came on the globe, he has tried to read himself into the transcendent. It is as if you took your teacup and went out to measure the volume of the Atlantic. It's perfectly ridiculous. How can you... Whatever is transcendent is absolutely perfect. How will you compare one perfection with another? You know how people argue, who was the greatest poet or greatest musician? I have heard people say, Beethoven produced great symphonies like castles, but Brahms produced cathedrals. Now you see, that sort of comparison is a marvelous example of the stupidity of us human beings. You just can't compare perfection with perfection. When a man is in love, he says his sweetheart is the most wonderful woman in the world. And then his friend will say that his sweetheart is. Who's telling the truth? But to understand this without condemning it, to understand it sympathetically, is one aspect of the art of living religiously. So whilst the study of the different religions is very helpful, because it helps us to understand our fellow human beings who follow a particular faith, whatever that faith may be. And in that understanding there is unity, there is compassion, and there is real beauty, the beauty of human living. So now, I would like to put the situation this way. I said a few moments ago that re ligare means to bind back to the source. Now, instead of using the word bind, we might use certain other words, to return back to the source. Bind implies a certain constriction, a certain compulsion, something which imprisons you, so to say. But to return, there's the feeling of your own free will. And as a matter of fact, that return can be made only through your own free will, because you love the truth, that which is transcendent, the source of all things. All right? Therefore, you wish to go towards it. Or you can put it this way, to relate. Because the whole universe, as modern science itself has shown so perfectly, is a universe where everything is completely interrelated. And it is interrelated in such a marvelous manner that the totality of the universe is contained in every single bit of it. Every single atom reflects the totality of the whole universe. Now, is it possible for the human brain to picture this? It's very difficult. This is why the study of science and mathematics is very, very helpful as far as enabling our brains to get the real thrill of transcendence when we are concerned with religion and the religious life. So now, there is complete relationship. So we become related to transcendence. Related, like a marriage, for instance. That is to say, the real marriage. Nowadays, it's the average divorce rate is one in every three, which is not marriage. They should leave out the word marriage for the other two. I mean, for that one. Or we can say join. Or we can use the word union, to unite with transcendence. But I prefer to use the word to be integrated into. Now you see, the value of using a word like integration is this. The source, out of itself, produced all manifestation. The totality of the universe has come out of the single source. All right. That source, in coming out into evolution like that, has constricted itself. And in the process of that constriction, it has produced ultimately on this planet us human beings who are conscious of everything in analytical terms, in terms which separate, which divide, which split up, instead of being conscious in terms of the totality. You see? So now, what has happened is that manifestation, the total manifested universe, is the transcendent unitary whole, which is the source, has disintegrated into the cosmos, which we perceive as incalculable millions of separate objects and things and so forth. If you can imagine, you see this theory, recent theory of the Big Bang. It has one very useful, one very great use for me anyway. With a Big Bang, what happens? There is a disintegration. When you talk of a Big Bang like that, you talk of something like an atomic explosion. And atomic explosions, in fact, take place right throughout the galaxies and so forth, all the time. All right, so it's a disintegration of the ultimate unitary whole. So our task is now, if we begin to see the significance and the meaning of the whole universal process and our particular task and relation to that process, we will see that ours is a task of reintegrating ourselves into that whole. Now, there is a tremendous point involved in this. You know how with the rise of the great religions of the world, since about, roughly from about 6,000 years ago, they began to arise, the real great religions which survive to this day. They have presented the idea of God, or the ultimate reality, as the omnipotent, the omniscient, and the omnipresent. Now you see, people have not realized that in presenting God that way, they are affirming, in fact, that the context of transcendence, the context of that source, is the infinite, the eternal, the immortal. They haven't realized that. Now, the result of this disintegration has been that finally, when man came upon the scene, he began to be aware, some men began to be aware of this disintegration from the transcendent source. And with that awareness, they began to realize that the purpose of their existence is so to live that they return back to their source. But not as separate individuals, as separate selves. It is this separate selfness in the human race, the whole human race of today, all the 4,000 millions who live in the world. It is this sense of separate selfness which is the root source of all the conflicts, the troubles, and the miseries in the world. As far as our senses tell us, of course, you are you, I am I, he is he, she is she, that is a piano, that is a book, etc., etc. That is how it appears to us. But our consciousness hasn't developed far enough to awake to the fact that all these things which appear to us separate through the operation of our senses actually constitute one unitary whole. The unitary whole is the holy. Unitary wholeness is pure holiness. That's what it is. Now, in order to realize that unitary holiness, we must be ready completely to lose the self. You see what I'm driving at? I am not going to attain liberation. I am not going to have a front row of the stalls in the courts of heaven if I've lived a good life. I can't bargain with God. God has a simple technique with all those who try to bargain with Him. He just does that, and down you are in the warm place. You see, it's like that. But to relinquish the separate selfness is the most tremendous thing that any human being can achieve. You can't realize that state by determining to destroy the self. You don't destroy the self. You completely purify the self. And in that purification, the selfness, the egoistic, vain aspect of our nature, which wants to separate ourselves from others, from the divine, etc., etc., you see, that disappears. When that disappears altogether, there is no separate, identifiable entity. Now think, supposing you have a shower of rain, a heavy shower of rain. Where does that water come from? The heat of the sun evaporates the waters of the sea, of the lakes, and so forth. They go up, they form clouds, and they form clouds which consist of separate droplets. And they are separate droplets because the water vapor, coming in touch with the dust particles which are in the atmosphere, the dust particles act as a precipitating point for the water, for the water vapor to become a drop of water. Now, the waters, the rain falls. We may get rivers, streams, or directly onto the ocean. But the rivers and the streams and the drops of rain, when they fall into the ocean, what's happened to their separate identity? It's gone, isn't it? Completely and utterly gone. The separate identity is gone. The water itself, of course, is there. It's in the ocean. But it is no longer I, John Smith, the separate drop of water. It is only the transcendent ocean itself. It is like that with us. So in this complete freedom from the prison house of selfness, not mere selfishness, but selfness is really something immensely bigger and more inclusive than what is implied in the single word selfishness. Selfness, when successfully active, manifests as a selfish action or word or thought or whatever it is. Selfish is an adjective, but selfness is the actual thing itself. So now, we have to recognize that we are finite. We are temporal. We live in time as separate creatures. And we are mortal. Every single person will, of course, die. No one can survive. Not even the perfected holy ones. They all died at the end of their lives. Every single one of them. You see? Now, you may ask, then, what is there for oneself? This is the really austere part of the story. There is nothing whatsoever for me, the separate, personal entity. Nothing whatsoever. We have it, we have the truth put in subtle forms when we say unto God the glory. But in actual fact, unto God everything. There is nothing separate from that transcendent total reality. Nothing at all separate. And back into that totality one goes. So there is nothing for me. What there is for me is here and now. I can actually experience immortality here and now. But we'll go into that some other time, not just now. So you can experience everything here and now, provided one lives in such a manner that this psychophysical organism, the particular person, lives in such a manner that he, the temple of the divine, makes that temple completely clean. When that temple is perfectly purified and clean, the Supreme, the Absolute, functions freely through that temple. And the temple, being a live human being, experiences that divine joy, which we call the kingdom of heaven, or the Buddhists call nirvana, the Hindus call moksha, the Zarathustrians call Garudamana, and so forth. That is what happens here and now. Your heaven is here and now, realizable, experienceable. But it is not experienceable as something which you have predetermined or pre-pictured. If you make pictures, they are all false. Every one of them is false. The truth, the absolute truth, is not only unknown, it is the unknowable. Because absoluteness has to constrict itself in order that this which we call knowing and not knowing in our state and at our stage of development experience. You see? Someone will say, oh my goodness, you're telling me something terrible. Yes, I am. It's very harsh, if you like. But you know, in the supreme harshness to selfness, the divinity which is imprisoned here is liberated. That is why man is indispensable to God. Because it is he who can choose either to wake up to truth or to remain blind to it. And by remaining blind, he just dies and there is absolutely nothing. The perfected Holy One also dies, but with his dying, the embodied transcendence which is manifest in the perfected Holy One is completely liberated. And that is your task. That is what you have done. You have liberated God out of imprisonment in your own being. I'm putting it in theistic terms because it's a little bit easier to begin to sort of sense in depth and intensity these realities. These realities people have tried to express in religious terms, in religious language through the ages. But we have hitherto never succeeded in giving a presentation which is completely free from inadequacies and even misleading statements. You may ask, why? Why do I say this? If you study all the theologies of the world, you will find one extraordinary thing. They have mentioned the omnipotence, the omniscience, the omnipresence of the transcendent. You see, they have mentioned that. But they have failed to see that the context of the transcendent is the infinite and eternal, and therefore indescribable. But we human beings are so constituted. This is, if you like, one of the deep meanings of the mercy and the grace of the divine. We are so constituted that it is possible for us to wake up in a nondescript manner to that reality. You will experience the thrill of that reality. It will be that transmutation, not merely transformation, but a transmutation of your own personal consciousness into the consciousness of the unitary wholeness. And when that happens, you will suddenly see, oh, all this and all the words and all the teachings, they are so inadequate. I'm not saying for a moment that they are false. They are all true, but they suffer from being pictures of the truth, dreams of the truth, not the substance of the truth. Now, if and when theologians wake up to the fact that there is this context of the infinite and the eternal, and that infinite eternal completely interpenetrates us who are finite and not eternal, finite and temporal and mortal, when they wake up to that fact, their writings about matters transcendent, their ontological presentations will undergo a tremendous change. So now, I hope you won't feel as if I have sort of taken away everything that you may have cherished or believed in. Because you see, the millions of the world believe in their personal survival as John Smith or Ram Lal or whatever his name may be or her name may be, and that you will enjoy fellowship with a super, super, super being called God or whatever it is, you see. Those are all fantasies, fancies. There is a reality which can be experienced here and now. Now, let me see. Yes, I think we have a few moments. So the question arises, and of course this is the peculiarity of us human beings. We will always say, but what about the masses? I may try, and I may be fortunate enough to come in touch with the perfected holy ones and learn, and what about the masses? I am the masses. Look how we ask that question. What about the masses? Something separate from this. Me. Are they separate from me in actuality? The nature of the total universe is that it is a unitary whole. And that any little bit of it, as perceived by our senses and interpreted by our brains, contains that wholeness. You know how very recently the hologram has come into human knowledge and human thinking and so forth. The universe is holographic. You see? There is a complete wholeness about it. Whatsoever affects any one person or one part of the universe affects the totality. If you or I awake, really awake in consciousness to the transcendent, it affects the entire human race. We talk in terms of my mind, my consciousness, and so forth. This is a great mistake. We talk of it as if this mortal organism was the possessor of consciousness or mind. Not at all. I do not have mind. I have the organism which is called me expresses psychical events, thoughts, feelings, and so forth. But I have a psyche, if you like, yes. And that is something distinctive of each and every single human being. But mind is a universal energy. It is the archetypal form in which the energy, the primordial creative energy, expresses itself when it is concerned with producing a universe of order and harmony and so forth. That is mind. When the psyche, my thoughts, feelings, and my reactions and all that are completely purified, then that universal energy, mind, begins to function through this organism. Then it will give out, then it will express itself in thoughts and words and ways of life and so on, which inspire other human beings to grow towards the fulfillment of their full humanity. You see? This is something which people do not really wake up to. Through the ages they haven't. Otherwise we would have been in a different state by now. So there is no such thing as my mind or my Father in heaven or anything. This word my and mine indicate how we are original sinners. Because in saying this is mine, I have taken it away from the totality. You see? What have I taken away? That which doesn't belong to me. I didn't create these things. You see, when, for instance, the Buddha taught the necessity for being free of all greed, of all lust for possessions, power, etc., etc., you see, when he taught that, there were very few who really understood the extent, the extraordinary extent to which greed operates. And it is that greed which makes us regard ourselves as ourselves separate from the other fellow. There is no other fellow. The totality of the universe, let us confine it to the human race for the present, the whole of the human race is just the one and only creative energy manifesting itself in different forms. You and I are different versions of each other. You see? I am the devil, I am God. I am all things, in that sense. If you really wake up to the thing, then that means you have to become conscious of it. Now, being conscious, this is a very important point, and I think we have enough time to say a few words about it. Being conscious of a thing is entirely different from having ideas about things, having beliefs about things, convictions about things, and so forth. When you are really conscious, that consciousness naturally, spontaneously, invariably, and inevitably expresses itself freely through your every thought and feeling, your every word and deed, then you are truly conscious of it. I'll give you just one example. Jesus was conscious of love. Through his every thought and feeling, word and deed, love found expression. Gautama the Buddha was truly conscious of compassion and wisdom. Through his every thought and feeling, his every word and deed, compassion and wisdom expressed themselves. So when we have to go through all the stages from the time we are born. When we reach puberty and young manhood and young womanhood, we swear by heaven, I love you, my dear, more than anything else. It's a lie. Not a deliberate lie. It is an inescapable lie by virtue of our natural condition. That is all. I love you. Why, the very statement makes the separation between you and me, not the unity. If and when the unity is there, there are no words. You're silent. Then you experience the divine silence. And that divine silence means that all the turmoil which takes place in the brain, and the brain, wonderful and indispensable instrument that it is a great deluder. That turmoil ceases, and then you are truly conscious. When the brain is silent, and all the sense organs are in a peaceful state, not suppressed. This is where the Hindu writings and the Upanishadic writings too have made their mistake. They talk of suppression. It's unfortunate that they use the word suppression. Yoga, for instance, the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, it starts off by saying, Yogas Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Yoga is the suppression of the fluctuations of your attention. If there are no fluctuations of your attention, your attentiveness is completely with the transcendent all the time. You know how in Genesis they say that the Lord God asked Adam, "Adam, where art thou?" What was the necessity for the Lord God, who is omniscient and all-seeing, to ask Adam, "Where are you?" None at all. But what is the significance of that statement? At what level of consciousness are you functioning? In the turmoil of the brain, or in that silence of the intrusiveness of the organism upon totality? The state of communion, of holy communion, is that state of silence where you are totally conscious of the divine itself, the absolute itself. And that is holiness. And that is human fulfillment. That is the culmination of religious living. So, we say very easily, "Oh yes, I know this, I have heard it, I know that." I don't know that when I speak like that. I just don't know what I'm talking about. When I really know, this will not produce words with regard to that knowledge. But this whole being will do that which is the perfect and the beautiful.